Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And I say it's exciting because somebody did something with the knobs and buttons and so on in here again. And that makes life a little more interesting when they do that, because we have to sort through all the knobs and buttons and figure out which of the, I don't know, there's a lot of them, and try to figure out which of them have been changed.
Yes. It's a little bit fascinating on my end, too, because the when the knobs and switches over on your panel get changed, the part that I'm recording gets changed, too, and my computer is ultra smart, and it thinks it's going to say, all right, there's no input coming in from this channel, so I'm turning it off. So,
well, it makes life interesting, and one of the things that Lynn Willey gets on us for is from his perspective of a professional radio presentation, our intro music is too long. And I said, you have no idea how busy we are during that intro music.
Trying to figure out what they did to us.
Anyway, this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and we are not only Jake and I, this is Jeff speaking, are not only a radio presentation duo, or don't-o, as the case may be, we also are the principals of an investment advisory firm in Salado, Texas, which not coincidentally has the same name as the radio program. And that's a disclosure. By the way, that investment advisory firm is registered with and regulated by the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. Now we've had our disclosure. It seems like there ought to be something more we ought to say there, but I don't know what it is.
That was it.
Okay.
I think we're done.
Now we can go home.
Okay. Anyway, if you'd like to give us a call today, presuming that today is, you're pointing at something.
Yes, you're rattling.
I'm rattling. Well, that's because I am not properly adjusted. If you'd like to give us a call today, and presuming that today is Saturday, April 4th, where you are and when you are, you're certainly welcome to give us a call. 773-1400 is the telephone number to use in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
That sounds good. Now what do we say?
Let's see. You usually ask a question, what happened this week, where then I generally answer with a facetious, we had a bunch of days. You laugh as if you've never heard the joke before. And then we actually get down to serious stuff.
I could simply say, U.S. equities moved slightly higher in a short week of quiet trading. The major indices inched up, but airlines fell 5% and biotech slipped 4%.
Wait a minute. That's dangerous. You don't want airlines falling.
They fell 5%, which is okay. You know?
I mean, the only time they should fall is in a controlled fashion with landing gear down.
Well, I think that the biotech slipping... just as dangerous.
Don't slip with biotech. Don't let airlines fall.
Well, last week, ladies and gentlemen, we had the first quarter of 2015 end. And so we ought to probably give a name to the quarter.
First quarter. That's what I call it.
Well, there's lots of first quarters. I'm going to call this one Much Ado About Nothing.
I'm going to call it First Quarter of 2015.
Okay. It's just
I'm very original.
But I'm going to title it Much Ado About Nothing. And the reason I want to say that is there were, I don't know, a bunch, a lot. A whole bunch, like 40-some, the majority, 40-some days in the quarter in which the S&P 500 or the Dow moved more than 1% in a day, which is sort of unusual. There were only 15 days in 2014 when it moved that much. It gets better.
How many days in what year?
In 2014, there were only 15 days that the major market equity indices or indexes moved more than 1% in a day.
Right.
There were 40-some days in the first quarter of 2015 when they moved more than 1% in a day.
So what you're saying is we had what we would say slightly more simplified is we had a lot more volatility this year than last year. And even more simplified is, man, it got bumpy all of a sudden.
But this is the interesting thing. At the end of the quarter, the about, these are approximate figures, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up about 0.34, and the S&P 500 was up 0.39, and it's generally rounded to 0.4%. So what we're trying to say is during the first quarter of 2015, the average daily volatility move up or down was greater than the entire move for the quarter. And what that boils down to is a tremendous amount of up and down movement, fear, greed, loathing, all kinds of stuff going on out there. And at the end of the quarter, the major market indices wound up
pretty much where they started.
Right about where they started.
Yeah. I have been reminded that our conversation tends to be a bit
esoteric,
hard to understand. I was reminded of this by a cartoon strip sent to me through the internet saying that we were hard to understand, basically. So what, for translation purposes, what he just said is, we had a lot of bumpiness and didn't wind up actually going anywhere.
What did I say? Much ado about nothing.
Yes.
Every time the market shoots up more than 1%, it's because greed has reasserted itself. Any day that the market drops more than 1%, it's because fear is rampant. In other words, both of those are emotions. Both of those require large amounts of movement up and down and stocks being traded all over the place. And then we come to the end of the 90-day period, and we look around, and nothing changed, despite all the fear.
And greed.
Which is people believing that the market was going to collapse. And greed, people thinking the market was going to shoot through the stratosphere.
What's common about this is interesting, is that the people that just didn't pay attention weren't affected by it. They didn't care. The people that were motivated by the fear or the greed probably lost a lot of money during that time period. And it's fascinating because what causes the market to move so much? Yes, you said fear, you said greed. But if you go to an auction house and people are all bidding on the same item, the price goes up. And if everybody wants it because for some reason, call it a Beanie Baby, I don't know, whatever it is, a Cabbage Patch Kid, everybody's voting with their money, trying to get that thing because it's worth something. And then the next day, nobody wants to buy it because everybody bought it yesterday. So they're selling it. I tried to buy it yesterday so I could sell it today. Well, when they try to sell it today, everybody's trying to sell the same Beanie Baby or the same Cabbage Patch Kid, so there's nobody there to buy it. So there's this fear of, oh no, now Beanie Babies and Cabbage Patch Kids. Should I put a little trademark on that little circled R behind those two, Beanie Babies and Cabbage Patch?
I haven't ever figured out how to pronounce that.
I think you just say or tm.
Arg.
That could be it. So the trademark, and the reality is that most people don't buy stocks because they are looking at them to sell tomorrow. There are some people that do. Most people buy their stocks or their bonds or any other form of investment for a longer term period, but it sure is nerve-wracking to watch it day by day because the people that are in it for making a quick buck. And let me say, there are some professionals out there that are doing that are moving quickly in and out, and they have very large computer systems that are allowing them to take advantage of the bad timing of everybody else. So don't try to compete with the big computer.
And from a fundamental perspective.
Well, there's two types of investing. There's fundamental investing and technical investing.
Well, there's also fundamentalist investing.
Yes, fundamentalist investing, that's a little bit more.
Buy gold.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. So from a fundamental point of view, as you were saying.
From a fundamental point of view, it's been, you know, sort of an expected thing. Oil prices fell about 10.6%. This is interesting. The energy sector stocks only fell 3.6%. Now, when you look at energy sector stocks, they're generally driven by the price of oil. So you would expect to see, with oil prices falling nearly 11%, they'd fall a bunch. They normally fall more than oil, but in fact, they only fell 3.6%. Apparently, it's because a lot of people are not accepting the fact that oil is not only down, it is likely to be more down in the future. There's a whole series of things we have to say about that today, I think. The other thing is that the safe place to be during the quarter the safe place to be, at least if you use the classical definition of safe, is utilities. Utilities pay nice fat dividends, and the price of, they basically do things like pump electricity to people, and the price of oil falling, you would think, would make utilities do really, really well. They're down 6%.
Yeah, and that was expected.
It was?
By me, anyway.
Oh.
Utilities tend to be the safe place to go, except when interest rates are really low and about to go up and are kind of flirting with going up. And then they're a really not safe place to be.
So
when oil prices are dropping and you think, oh, well, the utilities are going to be able to get some extra profit in there. No, they don't. Well, utilities are part of the reason why they're safe is most of the time safe is that the municipalities around them set prices and allow them to have a monopoly of some sort, some type of monopoly. I mean, there's deregulation, but it's really hard as an electric generation company to get into a marketplace. And if they do have a monopoly, the prices are fixed by the municipality. And so if you start making too much profit, they cut into you. Houston is a great example of that. They have a big structural monopoly there in their power and gas, and it is almost impossible long term for that to do well as a company.
And, you know, again, another place that people would think, okay, why don't we be in bonds or something? And the problem with that, again, is that the anticipation of high interest rates is there. And you would think, okay, utilities are down because we're anticipating interest rates rising. That makes sense, right?
Right.
So you would think that, let's say, a 7 to 10 year treasury, if you held a 7 to 10 year, it's called intermediate term treasury, that you would see the price go down. Well, as it turns out, year to date, the 7 to 10 year treasury is up 3.37%. U.S. treasuries across the board are up year to date, which is the reverse of what everybody would have expected. And if you thought, man, we'll go global and we will be more safe that way because we're more spread out across all over the place and so on, well, you lost money because the dollar went up. It's the first quarter of 2015, the much ado about nothing quarter is the one I'm going to call it, or you can call it the transition quarter. Maybe the transition quarter will extend to the transition year. This really weird behavior in the markets has got a lot of people who study these things, but not very deeply, upset. And
it's the not deep studying that gets people into trouble.
I may have said this before. I know I said it in the newsletter that I wrote at the beginning of the quarter. We are in the transition period between market recovery from the collapse that had two beginning points. One was in 2000, and the other one was in 2007, 2008, in that time frame. In both those cases, we had major down markets. And in the case of the NASDAQ is still not quite recovered to where it was in 2000 in nominal terms. And what is it? That means that we are still technically not quite out of the recovery phase for parts of the market. And we're not quite out of the recovery phase for the economy, but we're right on the edge.
There's some good news out there.
Well, this is the point. When we're on the edge, when we're no longer truly in a recovery market, but we haven't gone into the expansion phase yet, the reason for owning particularly equities and to a lesser extent bonds is dependent upon some underlying fundamentals. And the underlying fundamentals in a recovery that we look at, that people look at and say, here's why I should buy or sell, and the underlying fundamentals in an expansion are different. and we are in the middle of this transition between these two, and people don't know what to look at, and as a result, there is this chaos goes on in the market,
right,
and a lot of volatility and no movement as we make the transition.
And the good news that I was going to talk about is all the bad news.
Good.
Right.
Bad news. Good, bad news, like the low employment.
Well, let me explain that, because some people that are just listening for the first time probably just went, what? In the market, when there's a lot of good news, I get really nervous. Because that generally means if the news is good, then people have already purchased. If the anchor is saying this is going to go on forever on the news station, he's already purchased, and so is everybody else that's listening to him. However, if everybody's saying the world is about to be destroyed post-haste, we're all about to go someplace warm, and we're going to travel in a handbasket, then everybody's already sold that's going to sell, which means there's only one way that the market can go from that. And when I'm hearing as much bad news, there's some good news sprinkled in there, but there's still a lot of pessimism out there. People think this is a temporary thing. I had a conversation last week with my brother, who is a very bright guy. When it comes to what he does day to day, he is one of the best in the world. But when it comes to forecasting the overall market, he is about as bad as it gets. And he said that he keeps hearing all of his friends are saying we need to get out of the market and we need to get into something safe. We need to put it in cash or something. All of his friends are saying this. Well, anytime I hear all of a group of people saying something, it usually means that the opposite is going to happen. Because if a large group of people have gotten out of the market because they're afraid, then the people that are likely to sell in that short-term period have already done it because they got out of the market. And that leaves the buyers in there. And what I've been seeing a lot of, you said the volatility is there. There are a lot of professional money managers out there watching this volatility with shark-like grins, because they're watching the market drop 1% one day, they buy, it goes up 1% the next day, they sell, and they're selling to the people that are causing the market to go up, and they're buying from the people that are causing the market to go down. John Templeton said it very, very clearly. For those of you that don't know who he is, he was one of the greatest investors of the 20th century, Sir John Templeton. He said, I like to be a conscientious investor. When people want to sell, I oblige them and I buy. And when people go to buy, I oblige them and I sell.
Well, there's actually...
Don't go with the herd.
For the... And there's a lot of articles this weekend in the semi-professional press. I say semi-professional, which, by the way, is the best place to look. The amateur articles are in, the ones aimed at amateur investors are in things like Money Magazine and so on. Very flashy, wrong ways
tabloids.
Of looking at things.
Tabloids.
Well, Money Magazine, you couldn't actually call it a tabloid, but it ought to be.
I would call it a tabloid.
But when you come over to Barron's and the Wall Street Journal, and the place where some fairly serious investors look, then you see a lot of articles about the same thing right now, which is how to deal with a market that doesn't have any direction but is frothing about like mad. And the answer was strikingly missing in most of the articles, which is, to me, pretty fascinating. The answer to this is very much like if you are at sea in a good boat, a good ship, and you encounter a storm, you keep on going. You don't panic and jump off and get in the lifeboats.
Right. Everybody abandon ship unless the ship is sinking.
And you don't turn around and try to head back to harbor at that point with the waves behind you. Very bad move either way. The issue is, first, whatever vessel you're in,
Before you get in it, make sure it's not sinking.
Right. Before you go into the storm, you need to make sure it is a well-secured vessel that is properly balanced and is in good shape and has a history of doing well and is well-maintained. And then...
And doesn't say something like, this ship cannot be sunk.
And then don't, once the storm starts, don't try to change ships. Don't try to make major alterations in the middle of the storm. The issue is to point your nose into the storm, point the bow into the storm, and keep going. And this is the essence of truth for a well-diversified, well-balanced investment portfolio. Last year, we had people, to a lesser degree than I think most other people, other firms did, saying that, well, you know, the market was up this much and we were only up that much. And it's one of those things where, no, a well-balanced portfolio last year did not beat the S&P 500. It did. A well-balanced portfolio did, coming out of the 2009 market crash, either didn't drop as far or generally tended to rise a little faster than the S&P 500. Well, we're at the point now where the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones Industrial Average last year took off suddenly and left the well-balanced portfolio behind. And here's the key. The people, and there obviously were some, who left their well-balanced, well-managed portfolios and jumped into the market indices last year. I don't know any of them personally, but I read a lot about them, so I know they're out there. Or jumped into sectors last year because they thought they were suddenly geniuses, are now probably crying in their beer. And apparently there's a huge flow of money into some weird stuff out there as a result of all of this. The thing, one of the big differences between recovery and expansion is craziness. The craziness...
Well, the difference in craziness, because they're both crazy. There's a difference in craziness.
The craziness during the recovery are the people who don't want to get into the market because it's too low.
Yeah, they're afraid that, wait, we just saw the crash.
We don't want to be part of this market.
I'm going to wait till it recovers before I put any money in.
Right. The market's too low, so I'm not going to invest.
Which is a little kind of crazy.
We're making a transition at this point, and now we're going to have the people say, since the market is really high.
It's at a record now.
It's gone up a bunch. This hasn't happened. It's starting to happen. It hasn't happened yet. But this is what we're going to see next. We're going to see a lot of people who say, you know, this market is going up.
Right.
Therefore... And how do you know it's going up? Well, it was, you know, the S&P 500 was at, 666? I remember that. In the midday, it actually ended the day at 676 at the bottom in 2009. It's up around 2,000 now. Golly, the market's going up.
We keep hitting records. Well, what records mean for those of you that track this? It just means that we're expanding.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what, I mean, if you think about how a child grows, they hit a record every day. And it's intentional because children grow. If you think about how corn grows, it hits a record every day, too, mm-hmm. until you harvest it.
But this is what people will do next, is they will get over their fear, suddenly realize they've missed out on a tremendous amount of growth, and they'll jump in. The people who benefit over the long term, and I just read another paper this morning on it from Vanguard, the people who benefit over the long term are the people who have a sensibly balanced portfolio that's aimed at their objectives. They don't get greedy when the market is running up, and they don't succumb to fear when the market is falling, and they hold to a nice steady course over a period of time. And the paper, fascinatingly, suggested that the people who do that, not completely, but are very largely working with investment advisors, a little caveat here. We are a registered investment advisory fee-only firm, and the paper says that if you're working with a registered investment advisor fee-only firm, over a long period of time, the average investor gets about a 3% better return in that firm than they do in other firms. And this is the thing. Only about 1% of that, and in some cases, not 1%, is because of improvement in cost.
Right.
The improvement in cost on average makes about a half a percent difference. Because the investment advisory firm, by definition, is supposed to use really, really low-cost funds, but they charge a fee on top of that. So the net difference in cost between going out and buying your own funds through a broker or buying funds through a broker and buying funds at an investment advisor isn't that huge, and that cost is not that huge. Why 3% more? Man, that's what the paper is about. I'm not going to go into it in great detail. But the biggest single
issue— about sticking to it.
Right. The biggest single issue is that once a person is convinced of both the competence and the honesty of the people they're working with, they tend to trust them, and that level of trust enables them to make better financial decisions and to not succumb to greed and fear.
One of the things that we talk about on here quite a lot is we think long-term we've done really well. We're proud of ourselves. Otherwise, we wouldn't be charging fees to give advice to people at our office. But we say this on the radio quite often. If the average investor would just go out and get an average, well-diversified equity mutual fund of some kind, it doesn't even have to be good, maybe even mediocre, and then just stick to it.
Right.
If they could
just do very well over a long period of
time. Stay there.
Yeah.
Don't do anything else. Just say, all right, I'm here. It's diversified. It's, you know, even an index. When you hear us talking about indexes, if you had an S&P 500 index fund and you just stuck to it for a long period of time, you probably would do very well. Historically, you've done extremely well. Could you do better? Probably. Could you do worse? A lot worse. Most people that get into the same fund that I just mentioned get out at the wrong time, get back in at the wrong time, get back out at the wrong time repeatedly throughout their investment career. If they can make one decision, make sure it's a well-diversified, kind of mediocre thing, and then do it, then they become successful. The problem with that, though, psychologically, is that you've just been asked to work out a muscle you don't work out almost ever.
But the first thing you would have to do, which is dangerous. I mean, you were going to say what muscle it is?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. The act of using your ability to put off temptation, to delay gratification, willpower, is something that is really hard to use. Just ask yourself next time you have a bowl of popcorn sitting next to you while you're in a conversation, and there's no active thought that causes you to eat that popcorn. It's just happening. You have to use active thought to not eat the popcorn. That's willpower. Mm-hmm. It's hard work. You have to remind yourself every time your hand starts to rise to reach for the popcorn, you got to go, oh, I thought I told myself I wasn't going to do that. That's hard work.
Well, why would you not eat the popcorn?
If you decided not to eat the popcorn.
Ah.
It's not that if you decide not to eat the popcorn, most people don't decide to eat or not eat. If there's popcorn there, it gets eaten.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's sitting there. You don't remind yourself, I need to eat this popcorn. It's just being eaten. Your body is doing it. The same is true in the market. That same part of your psychology governs when you get in and out of an investment. You get scared, so you say, I'm out of here. Or you get greedy, so I'm back in.
They also, in order to avoid self-destructive investment decisions, we have to go against the hardwiring that says move with the herd or you're going to die.
Right.
And sometimes I notice that people get very worked up about things that I'm not worked up about. And I realize one of the reasons is I don't watch television. I simply don't.
Right.
I don't. We don't have a television subscription. We don't have even little rabbit ear antennas. Well, but we come on, we watch movies, and we watch streaming things that once were television shows, but we miss all of the TV news. We miss all of the commentary. We miss all of the market television shows and radio shows. Radio show, that's a contradiction. and as a result, in our family, we are blissfully unaware that until our, matter of fact, till our clients came along, we were blissfully unaware that inflation was going, starting in 2009, that runaway inflation was going to destroy the dollar and we should all go buy gold. Now, we started looking at gold and saying,
that doesn't make sense. It's overpriced.
Doesn't make any sense to buy gold. Gold has no utility value or very little utility value, and as a result, it's priced too high. But we had clients who were very, very, very distraught about the coming collapse of the dollar. And the issue is if
they were listening to, I'm going to put air quotes, those of you that can't see my hands moving, these are air quotes being used. They were listening to news radio. You're listening to it now. Most of it's about entertainment, not about education.
Actually, most of them seem to be
MSNBC or
getting this from
Fox News.
Watching Fox, and they were watching people who wanted to sell gold. And we still get contacted by people. Some guy named Rickards is in the gold selling business, and he is making the tour of the talking head TV shows right now because we keep hearing about him. It's the only way I know.
Right.
Proclaiming the upcoming collapse of the dollar. And the first thing, when I was asked about him, I did a little check on him. I discovered that he makes claims to have worked for the CIA and still be a consultant.
Yeah, you mentioned him
and all of that
a couple of weeks ago.
But I'm just saying, it's really, really hard, A, to turn off the TV if you're addicted to it, and B, to make good financial decisions if you're watching that box.
Right. We obviously know the news. We have this program that we talk about things. We read the news. But let me kind of mention something. A study just came out. It was done in Britain, and it was based on grocery stores and how they sold wine. So this is how it began.
Mm-hmm.
If they played French music in the grocery store,
people would buy French wines.
Yes. 5-to-1 ratio. They would buy 5 times more French wine than any other wine if they're playing French music. If they played German music, the 5-to-1 ratio went to German wines. Okay, so this was the beginning. We see this in a marketing thing, and then the psychologists go, oh, let's study that. So the psychologists started playing different types of music to wine tasters and asking them to describe the wine. What's more, they repeated the study again with the same people, same wines.
Different music.
With a month in between, different music. And what they found is that the music changes the way the wine tastes. If you're listening to lively music, you taste fresh, lively wine. If you're listening to low music, you taste dark, robust wine. And it's the same wine. And when you're watching the news, listen to the music for a minute. It's usually in the background and you don't pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
But listen to it. If you're watching Kramer and you've got red lights going off and sirens and horrible music playing, or this is one of those things that people get upset and scared and they're like, man, he's really hitting a good point there. Music is really important. If you ever get a chance, have extra time and you do a YouTube search, do some YouTube searches for greatest speeches in movies without music. They're not so good speeches anymore. If you think about Independence Day, the movie.
Right.
When he's giving that "we will not go silently into the night" speech. If you take the music away, it's kind of a corny speech. With the music, you get goosebumps. You go, man, I would vote for this guy. This is why, you know, maybe they should bring quartets, like string quartets, onto political debates and have them play theme music while they're talking, because then everybody would vote for the right. I mean, seriously, our decision-making when it comes to investments, if you're watching TV, it is changed by the tone in which people give it. It's changed by the music that's played. It's changed by the commercials that are played around it.
Yeah,
if you can separate yourself from all of that and just read it.
Which is what we do.
Right.
I love the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and I read them daily. I read particularly the Wall Street Journal daily, Barron's weekly, because it is Barron's weekly, so I read it weekly. And what I get out of the news is so radically different from what people who come into the office afraid of or greedy about get out of the news. And the thing is, it's mostly the same news.
It is the same news. It's just how it's taken.
Well, it's how it's emphasized.
Right.
And what advertisements going around it. And it's probably important to note this. You probably already know it if anyone's listening. I know you know it.
I'm not listening.
Anytime you're in, you're listening to or observing a medium of information, and that is your television, or picking up the newspaper or whatever.
Or medium psychic, if you're listening to your
right.
psychic. That would
it
be
is
too.
Important to recognize that somebody is paying for that.
Yep.
And if it isn't you and the payment is not substantial, in other words, many sites out there are free. Yeah. Look at the advertisements and you'll see who pays for the sites. And whoever writes the articles that are on there is going to be driven by keeping those advertisements on the sites.
Here's a quick one.
On the other hand, if you pay for something out of pocket, it may have advertising on it. But if you pay, and I'm just going to say this as a rough figure, if you pay more than $150 a year for something that brings you news, because $150, if you pay it once a year, you really have to think about
This is important enough that I'm going to – that's a really chunk of money.
Then you're probably going to get at least to some degree a balanced report, because all of the people paying $150 probably equate to more income than they get from the advertising. That's not a certainty, but generally speaking, the more you pay for a news source – the better the quality of information you get. And let me run this around the other way. The more you obviously and transparently pay out of pocket, I'm not talking about commissions, the more you obviously pay, where you see the transaction and you know what you paid for investment advice, the higher the quality of investment advice you're probably getting.
Yeah. And if you're reading headlines that start with, you'll never believe what, or this person did something and you'll be surprised by, those are salacious headlines. Those are not news.
It's like they were.
Salacious?
Salacious. All right. Man, that's as good as ilk.
that concept, though, we've got commercials to play, but I'm going to hit this one last thing. Something that's been in the news a lot in the last couple of weeks is the Freedom of Religion Act in Indiana. And there is a pizza place called Memories Pizza in a little small town outside of Indianapolis, about an hour out. And a news station went out there and was basically trying to drum up a story. They went and I asked in these small towns, and they were reporters that went out to different small towns. They were trying to get somebody in a small business to say something stupid.
That is not that hard.
No, and so they're walking around, and these are rookie reporters, and they're trying as hard as they can to get somebody to say something stupid about this law. And one pizza place said, they're asked rhetorical question. Basically, if a same-sex couple asked you to cater their wedding with your pizza, would you do it? And this is after lots of questions where they're getting kind of no big deal answers. Well, the lady goes, no, I wouldn't do that. Now, why would they even want to cater a wedding with pizza? From that, and this is hot button on both sides. People all over the country and the world have been leaving Yelp one-star ratings with horrible pictures and nasty hate-filled comments about hate-filled people. So I hate that this person hates and hate and hate. And it's just like this ball of craziness around a average person being asked kind of a rhetorical question with kind of a, well, I think maybe I would answer. And it's turned into this firestorm. The news station pumped it up the next day. They got hundreds of thousands of hits to their advertising paying website. So the next day, they pumped it up and started quoting off some of the stuff that was listed on there. They made their news story the news story. And they got more advertising revenue from it. So keep that in mind when news is being presented. Even the people that give the news have an agenda. And I'll be very clear on what our agenda is. We want a rational investing population. We want people that are making decisions based with their head, not with their emotional fear and greed. We want people to be involved because if more people do that, more people do better. We got to play some commercials.
Okay, we got to play some commercials. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we'll be back on the other side of a fairly large quantity of commercials with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach in this first hour on Saturday, April 4th, 2015. Welcome to spring. And if you'd like to give us a call in here, 773-1400
1-866-597-1400.
I was in solo mode. That's 866-597-1400.
Yeah.
With the flood of calls we've gotten in this hour, I expect we'll be just inundated in the last 4 minutes of the first deluge hour.
Yes, a deluge.
Well, I think it's entirely possible that the number of telephone calls could rise or fall 100%. In the next 4 minutes.
If it falls 100%, then we have imaginary numbers involved. If we have an imaginary phone call,
no,
that would work.
If you take zero and you drop it by 100%, it's still just zero. It's not an imaginary number.
If you increase it by 100%,
it's still zero.
So we could have an infinite increase in phone calls with just one.
I don't know. Infinite is a little harder. If you add infinity to zero, you don't actually – an addition.
Yeah, well,
it's the multiplication that I'm talking about.
Right. If you have to multiply by an imaginary number of infinity in order to get zero to be anything other than zero, it has to be an extreme number that can multiply zero. If we've had none,
actually,
and we have one.
Infinity times zero is infinity. It's not zero.
Correct.
So that's.
But one is a form of infinity.
I got that. Well.
In that it's infinitely larger than zero.
We actually have about 3 minutes left in the first hour. This next hour, I want to talk about several things. The oil glut, the probability that oil will drop down into the 20s is fairly high at this point. And it's not just the absence of storage. There's a political reason behind it.
Yeah.
We got a call on 773-1400.
Infinity has occurred.
Yes, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Oh, we got to hit another switch.
Hello, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach.
Hello, I just wanted to say I'm glad you're on here on the day after Good Friday. I was afraid y'all would be gone someplace.
No, it's a good Saturday, too. We are gone here, though.
Yes, we are gone.
But if you would, in your second hour, if you could talk about how the Iranian negotiations might affect things.
Oh, I'm going to.
That sounds great. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. And again, the telephone number is in here. Probably best to wait until the beginning of the next hour after.
You know,
773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. Now, when people ask us how many calls we had, I will say infinitely more than we had earlier.
Mm. I'm not completely sure that's an accurate statement.
Well, it is infinitely more than zero. It has to be.
No. Infinity is a weird concept.
There are small infinities and big infinities.
No.
There are.
No.
I'll explain that to you sometime.
There are microquasars, and there are quasars, which are quite different, but there's no small and large infinity. Infinity is just infinity.
I will have to explain that to you at some
point. All right. Well, that's just my political position.
All right. So we're all about out of time, but I'll just ask you a rhetorical question to hold in your mind. How many odd numbers are there?
Yes.
Infinite number.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So hold that in mind. So if it's an infinite number and you add even to it as well, there's an infinite number
infinity
of evens,
plus
but there's
infinity.
More infinities in both odd and even than there are just odd. Yeah. So Until the same thing. If you'd like to contact us off the air, it's 800-914-7526 or 947-1111 voicemail. You can reach us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com.
And we may or may not be back next hour.